Welcome to the To Faithful Men podcast. This project started in 2006 to preserve old sermon and study tapes of Wiley Flanagan, Hassel Wallace, and Mike Strebel. 2 Timothy 2:2 says, "And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also."
And between chapter 4 and chapter 5 of Daniel, you have a period of 25 years of silence. There's a gap. In the fourth chapter ends with Nebuchadnezzar being the king. And he was restored to his kingdom. But there's nothing in the Bible that indicates how long he reigned over Babylon after his restoration, after his experience of eating like a lion, see, an ox. All right? But it wasn't long, because his son, Evil Merodach, as taught in the Bible, he's the king. He's mentioned in the Bible because of his favor that he did to Jehoiachin, who was the son of Jehoiakim, you know. Jehoiachin was king, and he was only king of Judah 3 months when Nebuchadnezzar captured him and brought him down to Babylon. But now Nebuchadnezzar's dead. His son has ascended the throne, and the first thing he did in his first year, he granted Jehoiachin his freedom. He had been in prison all that time. And made him, not only that, but made him an honorary citizen of Babylon among the Jews. Whatever happened to him after the restoration, well, the Bible has no reference to Jehoiachin. Well, Evil Merodach only reigned for 2 years. He was murdered by his brother-in-law, Nergal-Glisser. And Nergal-Glisser reigned for 3.5 years. And then he, in turn, was succeeded by his son, whom Nabonidus, he only reigned 9 months, his son. And his name was Labask Marduk. He's also got another name, but the other one's worse than that. And then Nabonidus ascended. The book of Daniel tells us that Belshazzar was the last king of the Babylonian Empire. History, all historians, and all teachers of Old Testament history, the liberals had a field day concerning Belshazzar, because there was no mention of him in history. Herodotus, the Greek earliest historian, had no record of him, never mentions him. But he mentions Nabonidus, and says that Nabonidus was on the throne when Cyrus captured Babylon. He reigned, Nabonidus reigned, 17 years, according to history. So the 17 years, plus the 3.5 years of Nergal-Glisser, the 9 months of Labask Marduk, and the 3 years of Evil Merodach, add up to some 23 to 24 years. All right? Plus, however long Nebuchadnezzar reigned after he regained his throne, because in the end up here it says that his kingdom was restored to him, and he had honor and brightness returned to me, and my counselors and my Lord sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. In other words, he was even more glorious after his insane experience, so to speak. All right. Well, now that's the history between the two chapters. The chapter 5 begins by saying Belshazzar. Belshazzar. Belshazzar was a grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. And he was the son of Nabonidus. History tells us that. And that's what solved this problem. Belshazzar was reigning as king in Babylon. His father, Nabonidus, was a religious, a very religious man according to his religion, and he liked to deal in antiques. He liked to dig in the ground. He liked to check buildings and their cornerstones to see what was in those buildings. And he amassed, unearthed many, many, just lots of them that are still today. Today are in the British Museum and other museums in the world. And, he was always out doing that. But at this particular time, Nabonidus was fighting for his life. At the very time the chapter 5 opens, Babylon is being sieged by Cyrus. Cyrus had already gone up to Lydia. Now Lydia, he had gone all the way through Mesopotamia, through Haran, where Abraham stopped, you know. Well, he goes all the way across Asia Minor, Sardis, captures Sardis, and he captures Lydia. Well, Lydia was a strong kingdom that joined the Aegean Sea. See, and just before you get just at Troas, where Paul was, you know, all right, when they left there to go across Philippi. Well, now that section is called, it was ancient name was Lydia. And Croesus was the king at this time. And he knew that he was going to have trouble with Cyrus. He knew the Persians was threatening his kingdom. Well, he wanted the assistance of Egypt. He wanted Egypt to rebel against Babylon and Persia. At the time, Babylon was the king. They were the reigning kingdom. But Cyrus is inching in on the sideline. He's trying to take over. Well, Belshazzar doesn't pay any attention to that, to the actions of Cyrus. Well, Croesus wrote a letter, sent it to Egypt, and was appealing for help. He also tried to get the ancient Assyrians up there, see at Nineveh, to turn against Nineveh, against Cyrus. He wanted Babylon. He wanted to get word to Babylon, but he couldn't. All right. But in the meantime, Cyrus comes into Lydia and captures that territory and adds that to the kingdom, to his new kingdom, his power. Well, that causes Nabonidus. He has to meet Nabonidus now. Nabonidus is the actual king of Babylon. Belshazzar, his son, is just reigning as vicegerent. See, he's just a substitute. He's a vice president. All right? So in the battle, Cyrus defeats Nabonidus and puts him in jail as a prisoner in Borsippa. That's not far from Babylon. And then he comes and sieges Babylon. Well, Babylon was a city, according to Herodotus and Berossus, was a city that was 15 miles square. It had walls around it. The walls were 87 feet wide, 350 feet high, and then on top of that wall, there were 250 towers, lookout posts. And they were 100 feet higher than the wall, which made 450 feet high. And then outside the wall of Babylon was a canal all the way around it, filled with water, deep, so that no army could attack the city. Now, remember, just think, these walls are 87 feet thick now. And they're 350 feet high, so they can't, the army can't scale it, you see, not back in there. You got to think in terms of warfare in those days, see, 500 B.C. And, so old Belshazzar was in there. They were having a possibly an annual, yearly feast. It was honoring some god. And they were just going to have a good time. So Cyrus has, he and his armies all ready to, they're trying to attack. They figured out some way. Well, history tells us that Cyrus diverted the stream, the river Euphrates, made a bypass, that he dug a canal. And this history says that for 2.5 years, Cyrus had been making inroads to turn to divert the canal, see? Because the only way he could get in the city was through that riverbed. He wanted to turn the water out of there so he could just march right in the riverbed. And history tells us that that's the way it's done. But the Bible tells us that the gates were open. All right? It was the river gates that was open. Great locks. And both may be true. I mean, the history, the Bible is true. The historical portion can be true, too. He could have diverted the water. It could come under there. But, and at the same time, the Bible tells us that the gates were open. Well, so, but Belshazzar, now, had made a great feast, and 1,000 of his lords, they came, and they drank wine. See, all right. These lords, these rulers, these sheriffs, these counselors, these provincial men, now they drank a while, and then Belshazzar got to taste in that wine, and he remembered that in the museum, place where they kept the palace, where they kept all these treasures, see, the Bible has already told us, Daniel's already told us that he took these treasures and put them in his treasure house. The gold cups and glasses and implements that came out of the temple in Jerusalem. So, Nebuchadnezzar, after he got a few drinks under his belt, he felt sassy and he was mean and he was a wicked old cuss anyway. And so he commanded, to bring the golden and silver vessels, which his father, Nebuchadnezzar, had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, and the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem, and the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, and of brass, and of iron, and of wood, and of stone. Now, you see, his great sin here, Belshazzar, was totally unconcerned with the affairs of the state. That is, with the protection, the security, the safety of Babylon. Then, in his drunken spree, he goes against the providence of God. God had a purpose for these cups, see, and these golden vessels. And if Nebuchadnezzar hadn't have brought them to Babylon, the Samaritans and others, you see, would have pillaged them. Of course, when he conquered the city and destroyed it, well, he made sure that he'd get it. But if he had left it, just demolished, whereas somebody would have just picked it up just like raiding it. Well, God saw to it that these were kept and that Nebuchadnezzar kept them safely. But while he was using them to drink, instead of having any concern or any respect for these vessels, He praised the gods of Babylon, you see, of wood and of stone, Ephesus of silver and so on, and iron. Well, in the same hour...
Mention a verse as we go along where we...
All right.
Later day we can...
Yeah, all right. Verse 5, in the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. And the king's countenance was changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one against another. Now, in these two verses, verse 5 and verse 6, you have the story of the bone-rattling, knee-knocking nut. That's Belshazzar. Alright, now why, when he saw the hand, now notice, he saw just a hand disconnected from a body, chiseling, engraving, in the wall. He didn't have a paintbrush and paint it, but he chiseled it in the wall. He saw that hand, but he became troubled. Well, why did he get scared? Why should he be afraid? Why should his knees knock? Why should his backbone come out of joint? Now, Elijah was upon the Mount Carmel, and he went over and got on the ground, and he prayed to God. He thanked God for the victory that he'd already demonstrated there, and he was praying that the rain now might come, and he had a servant. Some man was helping him. Well, he told him, he says, go out there and take a look across the sea. See if you see any sign of a cloud. And the boy went 6 times. And no, came back, told him a lie. No, I didn't see nothing. No sign of rain. Well, go back the 7th time. He went back that 7th time. Came back. And he says, yeah, I saw a cloud about the size of a man's hand. Well, why didn't Elijah get scared? Elijah didn't get scared. His knees didn't tremble. Why? Because he was happy. He thanked God. He praised God. Huh? He said, well, the rain's coming. There's going to be abundance of rain. And then he told old Ahab to get in his chariot and get going. And then Ahab outrun. And then Elijah outrun Ahab, even in the chariot. Him on foot. Well, now the reason why Belshazzar got his knees began to knock. The reason why he was troubled, it was the power of an awakened, stricken conscience. His conscience was bothered. Now you take Adam. God, no telling how long God visited Adam and Eve, came down and talked with them. Whether it was days, how many days, we don't know how many days. We don't know where it was months. We don't know how many years, or where it was years. Indeterminate, indefinite number of a length of time. But every time when God came, why Adam was just and Eve, why they looked forward, no doubt, to the visitation of God. But one day, they heard the voice of God, and they were scared to death. And they hid themselves. Why? Because they had sinned. See? Old Herod Antipas, he was a Herod that was king. Herod the Great had died shortly after Jesus was born. But and then arose another Herod, Herod Antipas, was ruling. And Jesus came on the scene and during his ministry. And he was performing miracles here and there. And his fame was just going all over Judea and Samaria and Galilee. See? Well, but what happened? Well, now Herod, Antipas, why, he ought to have been proud to have a subject in his kingdom that could turn water to wine, or that could still the tempest, or they could heal all manner of sicknesses, feed multitudes. Well, he heard all about that. But instead of rejoicing, what happened to old Herod? He was troubled. He was scared to death. The reason for that was he had killed the first Baptist preacher. He put John the Baptist to death, don't you see? Ordered his execution. And what did he say, though? He said he feared because he thought that John the Baptist was raised from the dead. He said, that must be John the Baptist. He's the greatest man he ever heard, see? Well, that scared him. Conscience bothered him. But now old Herod Antipas said that, and he ain't supposed to believe in the resurrection. He's a Sadducee. His whole background was cast with a lot of the Sadducees, not with the Pharisees, but with the Sadducees who didn't believe in the resurrection of the dead. But, buddy, his theology gave way when his conscience got to knocking him, see? He interpreted the events that he heard in the light of a guilty conscience. And a guilty man that's running from the law, why, he can hear soft footsteps. And he gets scared of them. Why? Because a guilty conscience is scared of the unknown. Whatever's out there, whatever it is, he doesn't know what it is. He's scared as long as it's unknown to him. But when he finds out what it is, then they can relax a little. See, that's the way old Belshazzar was. He was scared and his knees knocked until he could get some relief, and he hadn't had any relief. And he called his wise men in. Looked like he'd get tired of calling them old boys in. No, they hadn't told a thing. They couldn't tell Nebuchadnezzar anything. Belshazzar calls on them. Oh, he calls aloud. He wants every one of them. And they came, and, just like they were before. Completely. You know, look, if I'd have been one of them hypocritical peckerwoods, I'd have made up some kind of answer to give them. But they didn't even open their mouth. Why? Because God was reserving the answer for Daniel. And Daniel. So then, and that's what happened down here in Guyana. Jim Jones. Look what he did. 400 people. See? He had already taught these people how to commit suicide. See? And brother, when old Ryan and these other boys came down then, and they were about to expose his racket, see? And he just couldn't live with his conscience. And then he issued the command, no doubt, for them to shoot, to kill him before he got on the plane, see? And then he led that bunch, told them then, and started giving them Kool-Aid and cyanide mixed to the little kids. And over 400 of them died. Well, now, he did that. That was conscious catching up with it. The end of the empire hadn't come, but he thought it had, don't you see? That's all he could hear. That's all he could make out of this script. Because he knew that Ryan had been his enemy and that people had been trying to find out what all this was about. All right. Verse 7. The king cried loud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans and the soothsayers. And the king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Now you see there are three things. He promised him to make a cardinal out of him. Give him a scarlet clothing, see? And then put a gold chain about his neck. Oh boy, he'd be something. And then the third ruler in the kingdom. Notice that expression, third ruler in the kingdom. Well, Belshazzar was the second ruler in the kingdom. Nabonidus, a man that the Bible didn't mention. See, but history says he was the last king. He was king when Cyrus came into Babylon. And so, when they dug up the plates in 1845, that hadn't been too long ago, see. They dug up the plates in 1845 and found that Nabonidus was given an order, issuing a statement about that his kingdom, he wanted, if something happened to him, he wanted his son, his favorite son, Belshazzar, to take the kingdom. Well, when they found that, well, then there's Nabonidus. He said, I, Nabonidus, my favorite son, Belshazzar. All right, that cleared up the mystery, you see. So Nabonidus was the actual king. Belshazzar, his son, reigning with him. Now, Belshazzar said, the highest position that's open for you is third place. My father is number one man. I'm number two, and you'll be number three in the kingdom. Or whoever. Now, that's what he offered to these wise men. Then came in all the king's wise men, and all of the king's wise men, and they could not read the writing, nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Then was King Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. See, he's still scared. He's still white as cotton. The hand up there, it's gone, but them words up there, what do they mean? They're scaring him. Well, they might have been good news. All he knows, he doesn't know what they are. The wise men don't know what they are, so it could have been good news to him. But his conscience is telling him that means judgment. That's bad news for him, see? He can't get reconciled. So, then verse 10 tells us about the queen mother. Now, the queen mother in ancient Babylon and in that age with Assyria and others, the queen mother had power. They were respected. But Belshazzar's wife, or any wife, or any concubine of the king's, well, they had houses for them, had houses for the wives in one palace, concubines in another place that kept them. That's the way the kings lived in those days. They'd put them out, different ones. And, they had no official place of business, official rule or title. But now then, here comes the queen mother. And she wasn't at the, she perhaps is too old. And no doubt that this is evil. Merodach's wife, no doubt, as far as I'm concerned. Or it may be in history, Herodotus talks about a woman by the name of Rheticus, and they think maybe that's who this woman is. That would be Nebuchadnezzar's daughter, and she would stand in a high position. Anyway, this woman was related to Belshazzar, related to Nebuchadnezzar, because of the terms that we'll notice as we come to it. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house. See, she hadn't been in there in this drunken mess. And the queen spake and said, O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the king, I say, thy father, made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. Where is he, Belshazzar? What'd you do with him? Belshazzar don't know him. He don't know nothing about him. He don't know Daniel. See, 23 years passed. And during this gap, Daniel got sidetracked, see? They didn't want that old man. He's 90 years old, between 85 and 90 years old now. Why, he's too old. We don't need him in the kingdom anymore. All right. But this woman, who is also elderly woman by now, and she says, thy father, she knew all about it. She knew about him interpreting dreams when the wise men fail. And she says, well, he's in thy kingdom. Well, verse 12, for as much as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation. See, she believed him. She had faith in him. Then was Daniel brought in before the king. And the king spake and said unto Daniel, art thou that Daniel, which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king, my father, brought out of Jury? Now the expression father, as it's occurred here several times, can mean father, can mean grandfather, it can mean a descendant. Just somebody in the line of somebody. You see, now like when Jesus, when at the prophesying of his birth, thy father David, see, talking about of the lineage, you see. Then was Daniel, alright, verse 14 says, I have even heard of thee. I have even heard of thee that the spirit of the gods is in thee. He just heard. He didn't know about it before, see. And that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, and they, that they should read the writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof, but they could not show the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of thee, that thou canst make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now, if thou canst read the writing and make known to me the interpretation, thou shalt be, and he makes the same promise to Daniel that he made to the wise men, clothed in scarlet, have a chain of gold about thy neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and share with a friend. Be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord.